My guest stands by. The book is called Operation Family Secrets, how a mobster's son, the FBI, brought down Chicago's murderous crime family, Frank Calabrese Jr., he would be. And, Frank, good to talk to you. Good to have you on the program. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. I'll mention that a couple of the stops on your book tour have been canceled, but a couple have not. March 17th, so we're 2 days off here. Thursday in Arlington Heights at the Memorial Library there at 7 o'clock in the evening. And then the next day, the 18th, at the Union League Club of Chicago at 11:30 in the morning. Those two are still on.
Correct.
All right, where do we pick this up? The start of the book, I guess, or close enough to the start of the book. You're coming out of high school. You get a job for the city, and is that where you first come to be involved with your dad and the outfit?
Actually, I had done a few things for my dad prior while I was in high school. It started with counting quarters with adult bookstores, counting quarters in a basement, taking a ride with my uncle every so often to go collect. Actually, what my father was doing was little things to groom me.
And is it safe to say that, I mean, initially you were just doing this for your dad? It's not like it was a job. You're working for the city. You had a full-time job, and in fact, your dad even controlled your money.
Correct. Yeah, I did have a full-time job. Prior to having a full-time job, I went to school. I was planning on going to college. You know, my whole look at as a teenager, when your father asks you to do something, you really don't think into why he's asking you to do it. It's just like, oh, you know, I got to do this for my dad. So
right.
It wasn't like I was all thrilled or I was watching movies and I wanted to, you know, be somebody.
Jumping back a few steps, what point in your life did you come to realize what your dad did for a living?
I believe we were in grammar school and there was a big newspaper article in one of the local newspapers. And also, I believe right around that time in the early 70s was The Godfather came out. So it created a lot of conversation in the neighborhood. Started to realize more and more, but it was kind of like an unspoken word around the house what my dad did. I knew he pretty much didn't have a 9-to-5 job, but he didn't come home and bring his business off the street into the house at that time.
And to what degree did you know who else he was working with or involved with, including your uncle?
I didn't. I mean, everybody to us was, oh, this is Uncle So-and-so, that's Uncle So-and-so. So, and, you know, not that they were blood relatives, but they were just, you know, we were just supposed to respect them like they were a family member.
Right. So out of high school, you start working for your dad. You become more deeply involved over time. Well, you did try to do a few things on your own. You did get involved in the nightclub business. You held other jobs.
Yeah, I started working as a young kid. I always had a job, made pizzas. I had the biggest paper route, you know, when I was in grammar school. I always worked jobs. So, you know, my thought by working these jobs was on the side, you know, I was just helping my father out. And then eventually I started to buy into it.
You started to buy into it, and I guess we're trying to cover a lot of ground in a short span of time
yeah.
here. At one point, you were actually expected to involve yourself in a hit on someone. What sort of... How dramatically would that have changed what you were doing, your involvement with the outfit?
Well, it would have changed my obligations with my father. It would have changed my obligations that, you know, once you cross that line, you know, there's no going back. And, you know, I bought into my father. I bought into my uncle. I bought into my family. I didn't really buy into organized crime. You know, I liked a little bit of the respect you got on the street. I liked a little bit of the high you got from the street all the time. But I really bought into family. That's what my father taught me. And I was also half Irish, so there's no way I can actually be a made member in the outfit, nor did my father ever want me to be. So it was about family loyalty and working with my father.
And what were you expected to do, or why were you expected to involve yourself in this particular hit?
Because this was going
to
be
to prove anything, I guess, what?
Well, this was, for me, it was about, you know, I idolized my father at this point, and this guy had done stuff against our family, and he threatened our family by some of his actions he was doing, and so I felt that this was, you know, something that I needed to take part in.
But at the last minute, it was determined that you wouldn't.
Correct.
And
correct.
It turned into a bit of a debacle involving your uncle.
Yes. Actually, my uncle, you know, on the side, he kept telling me, you know, it's not what you think it is. You got to be careful. You know, I didn't have the luxury of slowly going into this. As soon as I got into it, I wound up being involved with a murder. You know, you have choices right now. You know, don't do it. Don't cross that line. You need to do other things. And, you know, my father, too. I mean, at that point, still, you know, I still idolized him. And, you know, I call it two personalities he had. And I believe that, you know, he went along with my uncle also because of the fact that, you know, he wasn't ready to have his son cross that line at that point either. So he's fine with me having in the background, you know, helping him with a lot of things, but he just wasn't ready at that point for me to kill somebody.
Now, your father had cash stashed all over the place, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You don't know, maybe even millions of dollars. You had places. You didn't keep it at home, but you had other places where you stashed it.
Yeah, and they were in the millions. They were in the millions.
And your father controlled your money, even taking the money from your legitimate job and then giving you, I guess, a stipend to live on, so to speak. So at some point, you decided he owed you money.
Well, yeah. Well, I did. I mean, it was more than that with the money. But the reason for me taking money wasn't because I felt he owed me money. I knew where money was at, and I was trying to break away. And, you know, in the real world, you need money to get away. It's not like I could just go move three blocks away and say, okay, you know, I'm over here. Leave me alone. So, you know, my intentions at first was to put the money back and take it and make some money off of it, then put that money back and then take off and do my own thing.
Instead, you partied with the money.
Well, I partied with parts of it, okay? I did invest other parts of it in businesses. The only bad thing I did blow some of the money. I did party with some of the money. But then I also started my own little drug operation with some of the money, too.
Right.
So, and at some point, I decided, that's when I came and says, you know what? He owes me for this. He owes me for that. So, you know what? Screw him. I ain't paying the money back.
You took the money and said you never counted it, but you thought it was between 600 and 800 grand.
Correct.
Without counting it.
Correct.
I think anybody would count that money.
Yeah, and that time, what was going through my mind, to sit down and count it, you know, I mean, there was an adrenaline rush going here, too. You know, I know what I'm doing. I could lose my life for. And, you know, so my intentions were to get this money, make some money, get this money back. And, you know, as I'm starting to go through
But you didn't know how much to put back if you didn't count it.
Well, no, actually, I kept all the wrappers and everything that were marked with it so that I can put it back.
Okay.
And at the time, I knew roughly how much I took. I just didn't remember if it was, and that was for court purposes, somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000.
Which didn't sit well with your dad when he found out.
Oh, man, you talk about trying to get away. Okay, I mean, what I just did, he told me, I own you now. Until you pay this back, I own you. So not only did I not get away, I was more under his control now than ever.
And you gave up a lot because you would fly to Vegas, fly your buddies to Vegas, party in Vegas, have cocaine in Vegas, I guess women in Vegas. All that fun went out the window.
Well, it did. It did. And you know, I partied. I mean, that's a big thing. As far as women go and a lot of other things, you know, I did treat a lot of people good. I did spend a lot of money foolishly. But I also, when my father did find out, I got him a lot of his money back. He took over the restaurants I had. I had property. I had a vehicle. I had a boat. I had a dump truck. So he got a large portion of that money back.
Yeah. Let me work a break in here if I can, then we'll get around to the bust and what happened from there. How about that?
Okay.
The book is Operation Family Secrets, How a Mobster's Son, the FBI Brought Down Chicago's Murderous Crime Family. Frank Calabrese Jr. is my guest, and we're back, 720 WGN. Mike McConnell working with a bunch of music directors around here. Operation Family Secrets is the book. A Mobster's Son, the FBI Bringing Down Chicago's Murderous Crime Family. Frank Calabrese Jr. is my guest. And Frank, by the way, will be at Arlington Heights at the Memorial Library on Thursday at 7 o'clock in the evening, then 11:30 in the morning on Friday, Union League Club of Chicago. So those are the two appearances still in effect. That's enough of the music, please. I'll talk to Frank here. All right, Frank, jumping around here. Now, you and your uncle, Nick Calabrese, you got along well, correct? Your father was more controlling, both of you and your uncle Nick, in your opinion.
Yeah, my father was controlling of our whole family, people that worked for him or just people that were related to him. And me and my uncle is like an older brother to me. That's what he was like. He's like a close uncle or an older brother. But my father had this phobia that my uncle Nick was trying to poison our minds against my father. My father never felt that he did anything wrong. It was always everybody around him. So he had this like insane kind of jealousy of our relationship.
All right, so we're fast forwarding again. One morning the phone rings and it's the FBI, right?
Yeah.
It's early in the morning. They say, come on down, let us in. We'll take you in, and you go.
Correct.
The charges at that point were extortion, loan sharking, and what else?
Defrauding the IRS,
In other words, most of the violence they didn't know about, or at least couldn't prove anything.
There were no murder charges.
No murder charges.
No, they did not. They thought they got our whole little thing, but it was just they just touched the surface.
All right, so you're sitting in prison deciding that you're going to live your life differently. You're going to come out. You're going to give up drugs. You're telling your dad when he comes out to, I guess, go straight. And how did you decide to go ahead and flip on him?
All right. Well, you know, when I decided to write that letter, that was 20 years in the making. You know, before I went to prison, again, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was a victim. I was a bad person. Between the drugs and the stuff I did, I was a bad person. I needed prison. I needed to straighten my life out. When they came and knocked on the door that morning, and we knew it was coming. I had, you know, there was an investigation going for over 2 years. And so I knew one day they were coming. My concern was that it wasn't for the drugs because my father would have killed me in a second. He was against it. But when I got in prison, it was a lot of turmoil in our relationship at that point before going into prison. And the day before I was reporting, and I was reporting because I peed dirty. Okay, so I was the first one going in early. And
right.
We had made promises to each other. And my promise to my dad, which I live till this day, is I was going to change my life around, and I was never going to touch cocaine again. My father's promise to me was that he was going to change his ways, we were both going to work on our relationship, and that he was going to step back and retire from what he was doing. He was going to hand stuff over to other people. He had enough money. He was going to change his life. We were going to work on our family.
Well, at that point, you're an adult. You've decided what you're going to do with your life. Your dad just, you know, at some point decides he's not going to turn his life around. But four and a half years is all you have. You're still a relatively young man. You got a couple of kids. Why don't you just serve your time, get out, get on with your life, not touch cocaine, and tell your dad, no, I'm not interested?
Because I've tried that before with my dad, getting on with my life. And for 8 months, I wanted to make sure while we happened to be wound up together in prison. And for 8 months, I was going to work on this relationship with him. But in order for me to work on the relationship with him, I had to know he was being honest with me. So I would use old tricks against him that he taught me. And that was ask him questions about stuff you know the answers to, but he's not sure if you know the answers to, and see what his sincerity was. Okay.
All right, so he's being insincere, and again, we got to keep jumping ahead.
Okay.
You decide to type this letter. You send it to the FBI. You say, don't tell anybody I wrote to you. I want to talk to you. Sit down, and you agree to wear a wire in prison, though at first you're hesitant. You wear the wire. You get your dad on tape. They listen to the tapes. At this point, at what point did you realize you're going to have to implicate your Uncle Nick when you implicated your father?
I didn't realize it at first until we started talking.
Okay, so you had to implicate your uncle at that point, and at some point your uncle flips as well.
Correct.
What were his motives?
His motives were not to spend the life in jail. His motives also were to do the right thing because he knows that he did some bad things too. Even though he was more like a soldier, he only killed upon order, and he didn't kill just because he was mad at somebody. He still killed some innocent people, and he still killed. So he knew that he wanted to try to do the right thing also. So there was a few motives.
Generally speaking, when you were wearing the wire, how did you get your dad to open up? You're in a prison yard. This is not the sort of conversation that you had with him on a regular basis.
Right.
How all of a sudden in a prison yard does he open up to you there of all places?
We decided what had happened was when we were working on our relationship at first during the first 8 months, it soured. It soured. We got in each other's face. Things weren't going good. And then he came back to me and wanted to work on it again. And I thought this was an opportunity. And then what I did was I used another trick of his. And that was he told me there's two ways to get people to talk about stuff and open up. One, feed them liquor. Or two, get them mad or talk about somebody that they're mad at. And I did. Naturally, we didn't have no liquor in jail. And he wasn't a drinker. So I went with the pitting my uncle and him with us in the middle, me and my brothers.
Right.
And he started talking.
There was one point in time when you almost got caught with the wire.
Correct.
How did it happen?
He had just got done explaining in detail who was at the murder scene for the Spilotro murders, how the two Ortiz-Murawski murders went down, the positions of the guns, where they got shot, what kind of bullets were in the guns, and then all of a sudden I just had this look in his eyes. And my father was a very suspicious person. He's very paranoid, and, you know, no matter what I said, there was no way that I can make him say things, okay? And he just looked at me, and then all of a sudden he asked me about a tattoo. Now, I thought that he had second thoughts here, Is he asking about the tattoo that he wanted to see, or is he wanting to check me to see if I have a wire or something? Yeah, that was close, because if had I lift up my shirt, he would have known. And, you know, being out on the yard all alone, I would have never made it back.
And so what did you say to him when he said, I want to see the tattoo?
Yeah, I told him that I you've seen it already. I can't show it to you. There's a guard standing right there. I'll go to the hole. So I held the bottom of my sweatshirt. I said, I'll show you later when we're alone. And I took a step back. And going through my mind through that step back is that, you know, what do I do? Do I run? I don't know if I can make it. If I run, do I hit him? What I do? But I knew that I wasn't going to lift up my shirt no matter what.
And did he tend to accept that explanation?
Yeah, he did. He backed off.
All right, so you fast forward to court. How much testimony, how much time did you spend on the stand?
I spent a few days on the stand, close to a week, I believe.
And how many years was it between the last time you'd seen your father and when you saw him in court?
It had been, 2007 in court, about 2001, 2000, right? So about between 5 to 6 years.
So how did it hit you walking into the courtroom and see your dad sitting there who you haven't seen in 5 years and you're about to put away for the rest of his life?
I had prepared myself for court. I prepared myself to get bombarded by the defense attorneys, but I never, ever prepared myself for the emotion I was going to go through when I walked in that courtroom. And I wanted to run over there and hug him. I wanted to run over there and strangle him. It was just overwhelming. I couldn't think clearly. I sat in that chair for that half hour, that first day I was on that chair, and I was just in space.
So you were not a good witness that day, or did you come around after a few questions?
I did come around after a few questions. At the beginning, no, I was not a good witness. I was not at all.
Then we fast forward. I think we know the outcome of this. How many people in total went down? Originally, there were 18 indictments that fell to 7 or so.
I know a lot of people pled out, and then there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that went to trial. And they were all found guilty.
All found guilty. And what's the future for Uncle Nick?
He's doing his time. He's, every day he's trying to, pay the debt for the bad things he's done. And, I would imagine when he gets out, I'd love to, get together with him at some point and work out our differences. I still love my dad, okay? I don't love his ways. And, I'm sure that, he's not very happy at me. But, if we could ever work it out one day in a nonviolent way, I would, I would definitely do that.
I see that not happening, but you chose not to go into the witness protection program.
Correct.
Why?
I was raised not to run and hide. I was also raised not to stand on the corner and challenge people. I have a life in another city now. I don't want people to come after other family members because they feel that they couldn't get to me. I just didn't think it was for me. I didn't want to put my kids through that.
And the snitching part isn't held against you? Of course it is.
I believe it is. I mean, there's people out there that, man, but you got to remember something. I didn't have an obligation to the outfit. I didn't testify against the outfit. I testified to what my father said, okay? My father broke the outfit rules. I didn't. And there's a lot of outfit guys that were out after that. They're either dead now or in jail now that I could have gotten in trouble. I wasn't cooperating to take the outfit down. This was between me and my dad. It just opened the door for the government to take the outfit down.
All right. It's Operation Family Secrets in stores all over the place. Frank, good to talk to you, and best of luck, I guess.
Thank you, Mike.
You betcha. This is 720 WGN.